I recently caught up with Brian Palmer, AAT Past President and Tax Policy Advisor, to record a podcast. We were talking about the audit crisis, and I asked him what changes he thought were likely to come about.
There was a lot of activity at the back end of last year in terms of the review of the function. I mean, all of this comes, doesn't it, from a number of high-profile cases over recent years. And there was the Tesco's case where some of the balance sheet figures were overstated. Or it's just then you've got Carillion, where really that was more about the going concern.
That seems to be quite a fundamental accounting concept that you would expect an audit to pick up.
Yes, that's right. And that's why I kind of almost sort of laugh at them saying to you, because yes, you know, it is so fundamental, isn't it? You know, that you can have an audit within a few months that, you know, a company has gone. And so this all really speaks to the public perception, doesn't it? You know, it's, the public perceive that there's something not right within the system.
Do you think people have a realistic attitude to what an audit should be able to deliver?
It took me back in my mind when we were talking about this earlier on to one of the things that, you know, when you're studying your audit, you always see, which is, you know, an auditor, you know, is not a, you know, a bloodhound as such. You know, it's not to go too far down to things. You just merely satisfy yourself. You're not there to, you know, to find a fraud or everything. If, you know, there is not prima facie, you know, a case of it, but you're meant to do sufficient testing to satisfy yourself, you know, the adequacy of the accounts, you know, including going concern. I think the public, on the other hand, and those that are the subject of an audit, see auditors in a much more worrying and aggressive sort of individual.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And actually, it's interesting that you talked earlier about the going concern issue at Carillion. There's contrast between that and on the one hand that, and then the Tesco's case where you felt that people were somewhat massaging the numbers to try and change quarterly results, bring figures forward or backwards. Yeah. And then at the other end, the Patisserie Valerie example, which we don't know the full story yet, but it seems to look like there's some outright fraud there. Which is a different thing for auditors to look for. And I think the public imagines that the audit does all of that. Whereas, in fact, as an accountant, the going concern one feels to me like the biggest thing to miss. It's not the most heinous crime.
You would say, wouldn't you? You know, and I would say the same, you know, we're both of us not having full knowledge. Yeah. Yes, that one there would seem like a pretty much a showstopper. And you would also think of the Patisserie Valerie one that, if you should turn out there was a little more malice forethought in this one, that maybe there was something there that should have been picked up as well. But so in a way, I suppose this one, that latter one playing out now, whilst all this other work is going on that's come from the Competition and Market Authority and the Kingman report, is probably very timely.
And what does it look like, the recommendations of Kingman and the CMA? What's the timescale there? I know both reports were really advisory in their tone.
Yes.
What happens going forward?
Yeah, CMA was effectively a review, and so as you say, with advisory, and the Kingman comments on the auditor side was actually an add-on to his general review. So Kingman emphasised in a letter that he wrote to the Secretary of State that his opinions were his opinions and not those of his review panel. And, you know, he made a couple of recommendations. When you look at what's come out, both of them are not advocating, you know, the breakup of the Big Four, which I think one or two people were mooting beforehand. The further work has now been put in place from the end of December by, I think his name was Bryden, who was the former chief executive of the Stock Exchange and chairman of Sage. And now he's carrying out some additional work in that area. But some of the suggestions that came out, particularly from CMA, were things like having two audit teams working on this. Yes, that's right, dual audits. One from Big Four component and one from below the Big Four. Also, recommendation about putting in, the audit being instructed by an external agency, but not from the company, and that same agency agreeing or setting the audit fee involved.
Which, of course, could open up some opportunities for those firms that are in that level just below the big four. I know that contrasts a bit with, I know Grant Thornton put out a statement early last year that they no longer felt it was economically viable to compete for FTSE 350 audit because the cost of making the pitch was so great. I guess we may see them revisit that decision.
Yes, I mean, they were saying that a pitch could cost them up to about £300,000, which is a huge amount of money, isn't it, to invest speculatively. GT, they advise a lot of these companies, you know, in advisory capacity, so not to get the audit must be, you know, they would feel obliged to pitch for it.
Yes.
So that's why I think they made the public statement. And you can see them, yes, coming back into that area of the market and probably being well positioned to do it. Because, you know, I know the big four are heavily criticized, but you probably do need a level of capitalization, a level of expertise to be able to cope with a, you know, 350 order.
And of course, that materiality of any particular client was one of the first things I learned when I started as an article clerk, was that it was inappropriate for an audit firm to have any client that made up more than a certain percentage of its income. And so there is a floor below which you can't really go if you're going to take one of these massive audits on. You have to be quite a large organisation. Otherwise, the influence that client could exert on you would be too great.
I think there's not enough perhaps said about that aspect of things, but it probably is a good idea to democratize it. As to whether the recommendations are now being, you know, taken forward into this additional, you know, report, whether they come out in the same way or not, you know, who knows, who will see. And I think the challenge is, okay, this is about addressing public perception. It is about making audit firms look at the way they approach an audit and things like that. But ultimately, really, what we want to see is, in the long run, does it address the issues? And some of the issues are where things have gone wrong, particularly if you look at something like Carillion. The real truth of the matter, okay, the auditors may not have spotted the elephant in the room, but the fundamental underlying problem there was about the way that the contracts were structured, you know, with quite often public sector organisations.
And I guess that probably goes beyond Carillion to other organisations that operate in that market.
I think we're seeing and hearing some of that at the moment.
Right. So what is that? Because, I mean, a lot of the people listening to this don't work for the big four. They may not work for a FTSE 350 company that's going to get audit. They may not have, many people aren't involved in audit or subject to an audit in the organisation they're working for. But it feels as though the kind of public perception of the profession is affected. Does that have a detrimental effect on the rest of us?
I think, actually, the public are much more sophisticated in their understanding of that. They see auditors as a class of individuals.
So separate from accountants.
Yes. And I mentioned earlier on that they're generally afraid of them because they kind of feel that they're being there to find out they're doing something wrong. It may not really be the case so much as proving that things are correct. The public then see accountants and various reports. I mean, I know QuickBooks has done research into this, and I know HMRC did research a number of years ago. And the go-to people for general public or for people in business are accountants. You know, they're trusted advisors. What we're saying about making tax digital, Brexit, you know, your employers, you know, your clients are going to come to the accountant first. So I don't think, despite the fact that you know, auditors are, you know, subset, that is impacting on the whole business as such.
It's a great argument, of course, for staying on the front foot, for staying up to date, keeping abreast of developments, because the public at large there trusts accountants to be a good source of advice, and you can only be that if you stay current.
And that, I think, is the whole thing for accountants now. It is more about, things are dynamic, much more mercurial than they used to be. Therefore, accountants do need to be, you know, they can't sit in that reactive mode that they used to sit in. And I think generally accountants are starting to get that. Maybe they don't make enough of the fact that they are, you know, moving onto a front foot, being aware of what's going on, embracing changes in technology, leaving it for the benefit of their clients or for their practices.